This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Hello, this is Activity Quest, the podcast packed with things to do. I'm your host, Sean, and in this episode, we're off to the Museum of Gloucester, which used to be a Roman city, and now we're finding out about its past. Plus, Nigel from the museum is unlocking a very special space beneath the city that isn't actually usually open to the public. Very special one just for us. Make sure you check this out. Dan's chatting to Stu from the Ocean Conservation Trust all about how you can bring a bit of sea life into your classroom this autumn. And we're talking skydiving and swan petting in our guide of what's on across the UK. And we're back and visiting the mini Motley farm with Anna Louise to find out what's happening this week. So every week on Activity Quest, we get out and about and find out what's happening near you. And let's find out where we are today.
Hey, it's Bex here. I'm at the Museum of Gloucester. And today I'm finding out about the history of this Roman city with someone very special indeed.
Hi, I'm Nigel Taylor-Jones and I am the collections team leader here at the Museum of Gloucester. What we're trying to do here at the Museum of Gloucester is tell the story of the city and the people that lived in this area going way back in history. And when I say way back in history, I mean right back to very early prehistoric times and moving through more recent times to the Roman period and through the medieval period and on to the present day.
So, Nigel, walk us through what we can see at the Museum of Gloucester.
So one of the first things you see when you come into the museum is the little dinosaur gallery that we have. A lot of people don't realise that Gloucestershire is a great place for finding dinosaur fossils. The rocks here are of the right age. Many of the fossils in this area tend to be marine fossils. In other words, they're the remains of sea creatures. But they're not exclusively marine fossils, and you do, if you know where to find them, find dinosaur remains. And the notable remains that we have here are from a quarry near Moreton-in-the-Marsh in Gloucestershire, and they're the remains of a Cetiosaurus, which is a bit like a brachiosaur-type creature.
But they are not the only giants. Huge pterosaurs rule the skies, and below them, massive marine reptiles harvest the rich oceans.
We can also find out about the Ice Age, the Neolithic period, as well as something that really defines Gloucester, the Romans.
So we're now in the Roman section of the museum, and there is some evidence that prior to the Romans arriving here that there was a Celtic presence in what was then Gloucester, but it wasn't a major centre of habitation. But the Roman army in the 1st century AD was intent on the conquest of Britain, and they arrived in this spot in the late 40s AD and established a military base on what we now call the city centre of Gloucester.
Now, it doesn't sound that exciting, but I'm here to find out about a wall. Yeah, bear with me on this. A wall. Nigel knows exactly the one I'm talking about.
It's made from Cotswold limestone, which is an incredible feat in itself, because that means that all of this stonework was brought across country from the quarry sites along the edge of the Cotswold Escarpment to the building site here and fashioned into this very imposing and very impressive wall.
Back in the Roman era, this wall would have been about 6 or 7 metres high. The only bits you can see in the museum are just over a glass banister, along with... Hang on a second, is that a skeleton?
Yes, indeed. It's the skeleton of a Roman lady found in Hucklecote. Because although the focus of Roman life was very much initially in the within the protection of the Roman fortress, of course, as time went by, settlements and villas began to spring up outside of the wall itself. She would probably have been about 5'1", 5'2" when she was alive. She looks bigger than that now because her bones are sort of spread out within the stone sarcophagus. She would probably have been around about late 20s, early 30s when she died. We don't know what she died of exactly, but yeah, she's one of the key items on display in the museum.
And then Nigel does something I'm not expecting, and it's to do with that wall.
But probably the most impressive location is a few metres from here, outside of the building, in a chamber beneath Boots in Eastgate Street. And that's where we're going to go now. There's a lot of people who live in the city that don't even know it's there. But I'm going to take you over there now and show you one of Gloucester's best treasures.
So get this. We leave the museum and we walk down the road. We go down a small passageway in view of the public. And then we disappear through a very well hidden fire exit.
Okay, so we're now about to descend the stairs into the what's formerly called the Roman Eastgate Viewing Chamber, beneath Boots in Eastgate Street. So it's really an interesting time capsule. Right beneath your feet, in the heart of the city, that a lot of people don't actually realise is here.
We go down the stairs to a concrete room, and in the middle is this massive wall. It's about 3 metres deep, and Nigel explains it used to be about 6 metres high, and it's just a small section of wall that's been excavated. It used to form part of the outer defence for the city of Gloucester.
Yeah, originally, of course, the rectangular fortress constructed by the Romans had 4 gateways to it. The East Gate, West Gate, North Gate and South Gate. And those gateways, of course, give rise to the present day street names. So the East Gate, which is the remains that we're looking at here, for many centuries was in fact the most important of the gateways into the city, for the simple reason that in Roman times the East Gate was the one that faced back towards the Roman Empire. So most of the trade, most of the goods coming from the Roman Empire to supply the fortress here would have come in through the East Gate, because it was coming from the southeast.
Now, the interesting thing is that in front of the chemist that Nigel mentioned, there's a glass viewing platform. You can see part of the chamber from the street, but there's loads more here, and only half of the gate, which is what this place is, has been excavated.
So these are the original Roman stone blocks of the East Gate structure. And as you can see, they're of a considerable size. They're all fashioned and shaped by hand, which is an amazing feat in its own way when you think about the work involved in shaping these stones. And they fit together so well that if sometimes I do these tours with a spear, a Roman spear in my hand, I wouldn't actually be able to get the blade of the spear between the stones. They're that well fitted together. And it takes a lifetime of practice and skill to be able to fit stone blocks together that well. So I think that's one point I'd like to stress. But the other thing, which is interesting, is you can see above, there's a rather ugly concrete beam. The point being is that this wall is not just standing 2,000 years or so after it was first built, but even today it is still performing, partially at least, a structural function. So stable is this construction. And that raises lots of interesting points, but the chief one being, what are we building today that will be standing in 2,000 years, let alone holding something else up? And I think that's a really valuable lesson.
Well, big thank you to Nigel. I've really enjoyed my visit to the Museum of Gloucester. The museum is currently open Thursdays to Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Make sure you book in advance. Eastgate Chamber is currently closed to the public. It's quite hard to stay distance down there, but you can see it from above on Eastgate Street, and keep an eye on their website to find out when it reopens.
So gloucester.gov.uk is the place to go and find out more and book your tickets. And remember, if you try anything we mention on Activity Quest, make sure you let us know. And one of the best ways you can do that is by leaving us a 5-star review and then telling us what you're up to in the review section. You can also get in touch at funkidslive.com/activityquest. Send us your thoughts as a video or as an audio clip, and you can upload photos too, and we might use them in future episodes. Right, it's time to find out what's on elsewhere.
Fill your lungs with fresh air, stretch your legs, and get ready to explore a wetland paradise at Slimbridge Wetland Centre. It's over 100 acres, sits between Bristol and Gloucester, and is run by the Wetland Wildlife Trust. You can see ducks, flamingos, otters, and loads more, and you can also head down to their summer walkway to see the power of the River Severn, from its deepest mudflats to its tidelines. And you'll also discover the wildlife that flourishes there too. Everyone must book in advance. www.wwt.org.uk is the place to do that. Immerse yourself in the past at Milestones, Hampshire's Museum of Living History in Basingstoke. Explore the streets, shops and buildings of the past to discover how people used to live and buy a ration of sweets from their 1940s sweet shop. Your trip to Hampshire Past will take you back as far as the Victorians, with cobbled streets, a replica Victorian schoolroom, and even a working printing press. Milestonesmuseum.org.uk is the place to go for that one. Also in Basingstoke, but also in Manchester and Milton Keynes, is I, as in the letter I, Fly. That's indoor skydiving. You step into a big see-through tube and get blasted with air. To everyone outside, you'll look like you're floating, and you'll be able to do cool tricks like flips and somersaults and loads more. It's suitable for anyone aged over 3 and of any ability, but you'll need to sign a waiver and book in advance at iflyworld.co.uk.
So remember, the rules on what we can and can't do are changing every week, and they vary depending on where you are in the UK. So whenever and wherever you're listening to this, make sure you check those rules before you travel. Book in advance where you can, and remember to always follow the local guidance. Another place you could visit is an aquarium, but if you can't get there in person, do not worry, because Stu is from the Ocean Conservation Trust, and he's chatting to Dan about how you can bring aquariums into your classroom.
It's Activity Quest. Now, the Ocean Conservation Trust, they are helping to reveal the mysteries under the sea while you're at school. They'll do it all for you there. Now, to tell us more, the school's program manager, Stu Higgs from the Trust, he's here to tell us more. Hey, Stu.
Great. Hi. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for coming on. Now, before we get into what you're doing, can you just tell us a little bit more about the Ocean Conservation Trust, why it exists, and what it does around the sea?
Certainly, yeah. The Ocean Conservation Trust is a registered charity here in the UK. We actually operate the National Marine Aquarium, which is the UK's largest public aquarium, which is a fabulous attraction, fabulous place to visit down in Plymouth. We've been running that facility now since 1998, and over the years, our long-standing ambition has been to connect people from all walks of life to the ocean. Obviously, for people here in Plymouth, that's only a short step. But in fact, people from all over the country, all over the world, also have, we believe, a connection or a possible connection to the ocean. It's something that affects us all deeply in every aspect of our lives. So the Ocean Conservation Trust is really dedicated to helping people discover that connection and find out how they affect the ocean and how the ocean affects them.
Now, how are you making these blue spaces available to people at school? You're offering virtual lessons. Tell us more about what we can see, how you are bringing the ocean to life for people all around the country in schools.
Sure, yeah. The thing that we've invested in more recently, which I think perhaps has the edge of being accessible to a much wider audience, are virtual tours. So with this, we're not talking about the 360 experience with a headset on, but rather our school staff, our teachers at the aquarium, have got handheld cameras and microphone devices, a bit like you see the YouTubers and things using to put their messages out, and we're now able to go around the aquarium as if so you as the audience can have an experience that's almost identical to visiting the aquarium itself. Teachers will take you through the aquarium for up to about an hour and a half around visiting all of the animals. It's a two-way experience, so we can really connect people from any part of the country, or indeed any part of the world, to the animals that we've got in the aquarium. And in doing so, hopefully, to connect people also to the animals beyond the aquarium in the sea itself.
Amazing. So if anyone's listening to this and they want to badger their teacher to get involved, Where do they need to send them?
Sure. That's a great question. We're online, of course. We've got the Ocean Conservation Trust website, which is www.oceanconservationtrust.org. That website tells you all about the charity as a whole, and also there's a section called Get Involved. Under there, you'll find opportunities for schools to do things like the virtual tour that I've just described, as well as a number of other activities. We've got some downloadable classroom lessons that teachers who are really keen to find out more about the ocean, but are perhaps not quite so comfortable with the subject matter themselves, can engage with things that you can download and run with the class. And similarly, for people who are perhaps listening to this podcast from a family perspective or a home perspective, there's stuff in that Get Involved section for members of the public, for other organisations and things. So it's worth a look, whoever you are, I suppose.
Amazing. It's oceanconservationtrust.org. Stu, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us all about it.
Great. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Dan and Stu. And oceanconservationtrust.org is the place to find out more and let us know if you do any of the things Stu mentions in your classroom. The place to do that is funkidslive.com/activityquest. Now it's time to go down the farm with Anna Louise. She's got loads of rescue, rare breed and homebred animals on Mini Motley Farm. Everything from miniature horses to miniature sheep, miniature chickens, hatching chicks and more. So when we have lots of warm and rainy weather, it's the perfect temperature for mites to come out. But no mite is a match for Anna Louise.
Ugh, you know how much I hate mites on the farm, but it is a part of country life. If you own pets and animals and livestock and farm creatures, great and small, you have to keep an eye out for mites, not only on the animals, but in their habitats too, in their enclosures and in their pens. We've got to keep them fit and healthy and happy, and we've got to keep the enclosure clean. So I've got all my instruments and my tools with me. I've got my big favourite tool of all, the trowel. It's a super-sized, almost like a spade, but the trowel is diamond-shaped, which gives it a nice point on the end for me to dig in deep into the earth and into the mud and into the bedding and then scoop it up and out of the way. I've also got my mite sprays that keep the mites away. It scares them off. They hate the smell of it. They hate the taste of it. It makes the mites jump up and head off. It also kills certain insects. If you've never seen a mite before, they are teeny tiny. You can see them with your eyes, but you have to have very good eyesight. You need to wear your glasses or your contact lenses. And they're either black or red, and they've got lots of little crawly legs. And they not only live on animals and in enclosures, but they can also run onto us. So I always have a shower after I've done these dirty jobs that need doing. Now I've done my shoveling, I am spraying my solution all over their perches, the shelving, all the areas where they sleep and they roost at night, because we want it to be comfy and cosy. We do not want mites and insects to get in and to be biting the chickens, because they can live on the bodies of animals and they suck blood, a bit like vampires. So we have to make sure that we get rid of all the mites in any enclosures at this time of year. Finish that bottle. Now I'm going to get my spray. Really important not to breathe this in, so I'll hold my breath. It's important to say that there are no animals in this enclosure when I'm doing this. They're all outside, free roaming around the garden. I love the spray because I can spray and get coverage on the whole hut, the whole enclosure, and it gets into all the nooks and crannies. I can cover the whole pen. Just stepping outside to breathe. I'm going back in. If you could see it now, it looks like puffs of smoke are billowing out of the chicken hut. No, Gloria, you can't come in yet. You have to be patient. The chickens love to see what you're doing. They're very, very nosy creatures. They like to see, a bit like home makeovers. They like to wait at the door and see the transformation. Give it 10 minutes. You've got to wait for the spray. Oh, she's eyeing me up. I know you're impatient. I know you don't want to wait. That doesn't mean you can come in early, though. 10 minutes has passed. Unleash the Gloria and let her see what she thinks of her new spruced up pen. Ultra clean. 100% mite free. Oh, she's cocking her head. She's sort of having a look around. She's tilting her head. She's found some earthworms in the ground. She's picked it up. She's running around with joy. Worms are their favourite juicy treat going. They like to snatch them off each other and fight over them as well. She's giving it a good look up and down. And she's nestling as she's nestling herself in. Protecting herself from the wind and rain outside. I think that is a big thumbs up. Or should I say toes up from Gloria the chicken.
Cheers, Anna Louise. And don't miss next week's episode. We'll be back on Mini Motley Farm with Anna Louise upcycling and making a nest box for those young egg-laying chickens. And whatever you do, tell us at funkidslive.com/activityquest what you think of the podcast. Remember to rate, review and subscribe wherever you're listening to this pod. I've been Sean. This has been a podcast from the UK's children radio station, Fun Kids. You can listen to my show on DAB Digital Radio, online on the free Fun Kids mobile app and on your smart speaker. Just say play Fun Kids and every weekday when you wake up. It's a very nonsense show. It's a breakfast show. It starts at 6:30. Robot and I play loads of tunes. Robot gets on my nerves. And we also celebrate everything that you're up to as well. See you later. Bye.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB Digital Radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.